Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. This is a podcast of Lions Wire. Eric, OTAs started this week. You haven't heard from us. Well, you have heard from me, but the folks listening haven't heard from us unless they heard you on another podcast the other day.
That's true.
In 2 weeks, we took a week off there. Now we're back. Not a lot's happening. Nobody's been added. Nobody's been subtracted. But there's a lot going on now that we're having organized team practices. So why don't we dive right in? And what was the mood like out there today? You happened to be in Allen Park today for practice. What was everything like down there?
There was rain early, right? So the rain they put a big question mark on whether or not we were going to be able to watch practice indoors or watch practice outdoors. And they decided to start outdoors and see what happened. And then, as if like some miracle, the sun came out and glowed for an hour and 55 minutes of the 2 hour practice. So it was nice. The energy is exciting to see because you haven't seen it in a while. They had OTAs last week that were open to the media. I was unable to attend, so Jeff Risden went in my stay there, and he got to experience some cool stuff for Lions Wire. He wrote up an article on his experience. I wrote up an article on my experience. When you get outside and you're practicing and you're trying new things, there's always a little bit of it. There's always going to be energy, right? And last week they were focused on red zone activities, and so they put them in a lot of situations where you saw specific like sets, and then you had specific outcomes that went with it. Within this week, it was all about the first two, three downs, right? What kind of plays are you going to execute to stop the pass, stop the run, and then vice versa. What types of offensive plays are you going to do to execute? So you saw a different wrinkle than what was there last weekend. And what was really neat is that you saw a whole different element from the defense. My article, what I called it, Multiplicity Squared. That was our OTA article review. That's what
available now on USA Today Lions Wire.
And that's because, basically, I said, if you were having a hard time figuring out last year's multiplicity and how complicated the scheme was, this year's going to be it's going to be the same thing, but just like squared. They were doing so much stuff, and they were doing a lot of unique stuff. They were playing players out of position, which we can't talk about. They were showing blitzes from angles that we can't talk about. Like, there's all this information that we can't talk about, but...
Well, then you shouldn't mention it.
But what we can do is, there's always little loopholes, right? And so what we'll try and figure out over the next couple weeks with, is...
How to disseminate all this information.
Yeah, what can we share?
Coy.
Well, and those of you who have followed my writing for a while know that I tend to do this. I tend to say things a certain way, and then I repeat them a certain way. There's a reason behind it, and I tend to put Easter eggs in my articles and stuff like that every once in a while, just to have some fun. But there's a lot of really cool things that were happening today, specifically on the defense. So I was excited to see that.
All right, so you did not have the opportunity last season to go to OTAs, correct?
Oh yeah, correct.
All right, but you did go to training camp. Mm-hmm. What would you say is the biggest difference between then and now when it comes to just maybe not so much the organization of the team, but the way the team's reacting to the coaching, the way the team's dealing with each other now that they have a year within the system?
I'd say the biggest difference is it just operates very smoothly, right? One of the big shocks we had last year in training camp was the pace at which training camp operated, right? It was 5 minutes on activity, the whistle blows, and then you sprint to the next activity, and then you do that activity, and then the 5 minutes and the whistle blows, and then you sprint to the next activity, and there was a very fast pace. At this
frantic
point, yeah, exactly. That's a great word. with this group, what you see is the veterans are almost instinctively like knowing when the change is coming, and you can see them already like preparing to go. And it just, there's not, it doesn't look as chaotic and rushed. It looks very prepared and planned, and they know when it's coming, and it's just on to the next thing. So there seems to be a lot of familiarity. And I think that's like, I think that's important, because while there was a lot of offensive turnover, there wasn't a whole lot of defensive turnover. There was just a lot of players added, didn't lose a whole bunch. And so that familiarity is starting to show up because, as I said earlier, you're starting to see layers that we didn't get to see last year because of that familiarity.
How was Coach Patricia's behavior?
Well, you know, the first interaction we had with him was at the press conference this morning. And if you've watched any of them, he seems incredibly more relaxed than he was last year. At really at any point, not even like just training camp or earlier in the season when he first took the job. He seems a lot more comfortable, and he's talked about this, you know, in different media forums where he feels like there's not as much, you know, catch-up time that he's doing. So he is spending all this time. He's, you know, on the coaching aspects of things, which is what he enjoys more, which is why he comes off more relaxed. Like, at the end of the press conference today, they asked him, being that it's the second year with this team and most of the players have been in these schemes for now, or specifically the defensive guys have been in the schemes for 2 years, is he teaching less than he did before because he doesn't have to? And Patricia said it's actually the opposite. He said he's actually teaching more now because he feels like he's laid a base and now he can add more onto it. And he said, like, it takes, he said, remember his parents are teachers. So he said, you know, it takes three times for someone to learn something, right? You got to hear it three times or see it three times, right?
Oh, so that means he needs a third season.
And that's kind of like, yeah, he's like,
so and now they're already setting up the narrative early.
So he said today, this is basically like season two. And this is the second time they're hearing these things. And so now he's like, they're just going to get better. And they're adding layers and wrinkles. And it's a neat thing to watch the evolution of this happen.
All right, so you've talked about the word defense keeps showing up repeatedly.
Yeah.
So let's start with the defense. So who on the defensive side of the ball would everybody be most shocked to hear is performing rather well?
Well, that'd be Tease Tabor, right?
It's shocking.
Yes, absolutely should be shocking to hear that he's doing well, because this is a player who was an active scratch, a healthy scratch, for more games than he was not last year. And he only saw playing time down the stretch and at the beginning. And he was rarely active and allowed to actually... And when he was active, he was rarely on the field. So the fact that he opened OTAs as a starter in Darius Slay's spot, because Darius Slay's not at OTAs, it raised a couple eyebrows. Then he makes an interception on the first day of OTAs, and then he has a pass breakup on the next one, and then he makes another interception on the next day of OTAs. And now you're like, all right, well, you know, he's making plays, no big deal, right? But now enter week two, and he's still in the starting lineup, and he's still making plays, and now you're starting to pay attention. So, I believe it was Kyle Mankey who grabbed him today and pulled him over to the media, and a couple of us got a chance to listen to him and talk to him. And, you know, he said some pretty cool things. Like, you got to remember, when he came into the league out of Florida, he was very boisterous, right? He was very, like, a boastful. I'm great. You know, he spent the whole year being told that he was the best corner in the NCAA. He believed he was the best corner in the NCAA. Tests poorly, falls to the second round, still believes that he's awesome. Says things like, I don't care about my 40 time, watch the tape. I'm great, right? And so that mentality carried over, and I think he thought he had the answers, and then he quickly found out he didn't.
And then we saw him live.
Yeah, and then he struggled, and then he struggled some more, and then he ended up going through last season where he was benched, and a light bulb came on today, or well, not today, but this year, and he said, you know, I'm not getting on the field, and I need to do something about it. And when he was asked today about why he was able to make improvements, he said, I became more coachable. And, you know, like, he literally has, the light bulb has clicked on, and he said, I've got to listen to these coaches, and the coaches are making changes, and then I'm doing these changes, and now I'm finding more success. And I know this seems like very logical for us, but for, you got to remember, like, these kids.
It's a youngster.
That are, exactly.
And he's always been told he was great.
Since he was in high school, right?
Like, maybe earlier.
When, exactly. And so, like, a lot of the, and that's one of the reasons why I think a lot of these big time players wash out, is because they've been told for so long that they're so good. And then they get a quick dose of reality and they can't handle it.
They get challenged.
Exactly. Yeah. And then they can't, and then they struggle and they can't handle it. And, you know, the cornerback position is hard enough to learn as it is, much less, you know, when you have this I don't want to say he has an ego, but he kind of that came across as like an ego, and he was put in his place, and he didn't respond appropriately, and now it seems like he is. And that's encouraging. Now, is he going to be the third outside corner? I don't know. That would be ideal. You know what I mean? I mean, if he could developed into the ability to earn that spot, then great. Right now he's repping ahead of Oruwariye, but Oruwariye is with the second team right now, and he was with the third team last week, so he's moving his way up as well. Melvin has been the consistent starter on the opposite side. Marcus,
how has he fared?
He's been fine. With most corners, if you don't notice them a whole lot, it usually means they're doing what they're supposed to do, right?
Yep.
So he's looked fine. Has not stood out negatively to me, which is what you like.
Who's playing behind him?
Marcus Cooper. And so Marcus Cooper and Oruwariye are backing up Melvin and Tees, right? Which puts my guy Mike Ford down on the third unit.
Yeah, he's dipping.
Yes, and so I'm a bit surprised by that, because I think Ford is a better player than Cooper. And he played more last year than Cooper. Of course, Cooper got injured. But I like Ford's upside more than I like Cooper's upside. But they have a very specific guy that they're looking for, and they're looking to put a big cornerback opposite Darius Slay. Melvin, Oruwariye, Cooper, they're all over 6 foot one. I think there might all even all be 6 foot two and above. And then Tees is in challenging for that spot. He's over 6 foot. So a guy like Mike Ford, who's only 5'10", he's a guy who's probably might be better off on the opposite side trying to back up Darius Slay. But he could be a fringe guy at this point, which is not something I thought I would say, because, again, I like his upside. In the nickel, Justin Coleman was not participating today. He was with the unit. He just didn't get in on plays. I think he's still working through something. And so we saw Agnew taking the first reps at nickelback. But when they went to second team, they didn't add another corner at nickelback. They went to safeties. And so we never actually saw who was a nickelback beyond Agnew. And in all honesty, that might be it. They might play Coleman and Agnew at nickel, and the rest of the guys are outside guys, and then they're going to plan on using safeties as their backups in the slots when they go into dimes and quarters and stuff like that. So it's an interesting dynamic in the secondary right now, and there's still a long way to shake out, but Tabor has shown some maturity that he hasn't shown over the last 2 years, and he's making plays. He seems humbled, and that is that could go far for him. Now, will he make he still might be on the bubble as far as making the roster, but I actually like his chances better now after seeing him in person and talking to him than I did, even a week ago.
All right, did you want to mention anything else about the defensive backs? Because we can move our way up, talk about linebackers. Are we seeing Jelani Tavai a lot?
Yes. Yes. And I think technically Tavai won't be a starter. I still think it's going to be Kennard, Davis, and Christian Jones who are going to be your starters. But
Tavai, do you think that's only a part-time thing, maybe half of the season type thing? Would that be the plan? You would think. Now, obviously, you can't quote anybody on that.
Sure.
But should that be the – how about this? Should that be the expectation? He's a second-round draft pick.
Well, let me put it this way. Last year, Kennard saw 100% of snaps. Davis saw 100% of snaps. Christian Jones saw 70% of snaps. I would not be surprised to see Kennard, his snaps dip, and Christian Jones' snap dip because Tavai is finding his way on the field at the expense of those guys. I also think he could find his way on the field at the expense of other players, and we'll find out who those specific guys are later as we go, but later on in the season as we go. But I'm expecting Tavai to probably play an equal amount to Christian Jones, which is fine. He's not going to be a guy who's going to be reserve. He's going to be a guy that's going to be play a significant role because when you put Tavai and Davis on the field at the same time, they can do some pretty scary stuff. Like, Christian Jones is a very good will, but he's really only a will. Yes, he played defensive end at Florida State, and maybe you could talk yourself into saying maybe he could play some jack, but I don't think Christian Jones is a Mike, even though they will drop him there sometimes. I don't think he's a Mike. And Devin Kennard is a good jack, but I don't think he can drop and play the Mike either. Both Davis and Tavai can play the Mike, they can play the jack, they can play the will. And when you have that positional flexibility, eventually those two guys are going to get a lot more playing time. At the end of the year, it's very possible that Davis and Tavai end up being the two linebackers that lead the way in snap counts. I could also see it being Davis and Kennard and Tavai being third. But Tavai is going to be a big part of this defense this year, and then next year he will probably – I wouldn't be surprised if he was the starting will linebacker next year.
All right. Now, of the pass rushers, we can jump
up.
Let me add
one more thing. Oh, sure. Sorry, I apologize.
No, don't apologize.
There's a lot of Jalen Reeves and Maben fans out there. He was playing consistently with the second team this week, and Reeves Maben is a will, but he was playing at the mic as well. And that's something that we've seen from him in the past, but we've never really seen it consistent because he's really not the typical Patricia Mike linebacker, but his ability to cover is really, I think, what separates him and allows him to be as one of the off the ball linebacker guys. So for the Jalen Reeves Maven fans out there, he's making an impression this early as well. If they keep, I think they'll keep four off the ball linebackers, and right now he would be number four in my opinion.
All right, moving up to the pass rushers. Oh, and also this is a no apologies podcast. Unless you're apologizing for a mistaken comment about a player's mental status.
Oh.
Well, this is a poor callback. Anyhow, there's a couple people who do appreciate that.
Sure.
Listening. Pass rushers. Now, we were using a bevy of pass rushers. We were bringing everybody, a little bit of insight on that.
You know, what's interesting is that in the past, they've pretty much been straightforward with their three, interior. They had their two interior guys and then their defensive end, and then they used the jack as a pass rusher. I think we're going to see some more variation with pass rushing coming from different angles.
As you indicated with the title of your article today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't say
we're not going to hold you to it.
Names, they're going to blitz this player more because that's what I saw. I can't say that.
Could you say you saw a lot of blitzing in practice?
I can say that there was different blitzing than I saw last year for sure. And because it's different, I can't say what it was, but they are bringing players from a lot of different spots, and the additions that they've made in the front seven have been big factors in where they're bringing guys. Like the player, they're bringing some of these guys that they weren't bringing before.
You know, maybe we'll leave it at that, since you obviously can't talk about it, and you love bringing that up repeatedly, so everybody can hear, like, well, I know a bunch of stuff, but I just can't talk about any of it.
I'm trying to.
All right, let's talk about a couple of the wild cards on the defense.
Yeah,
Miles Killebrew, was he used at all?
Yes, he was used as a will linebacker with the third team.
He's on his way out.
In one set of drills, but not others. He's been involved in all the special team stuff again, which is nice. He was the leading special teams player last year, and he could be that guy again. But he had a hard time making the linebacker unit last year, and this year is deeper. So it's an uphill battle for him. He's definitely still with the linebackers. Even though he wears the safety's number and he's listed as a safety, he definitely plays with the linebackers.
All right. What about the safeties? You didn't really mention the safeties. Nothing really to report there. It's the usual suspects.
My guess originally was that they were going to keep four safeties. Now I'm starting to think they could keep five. What we saw was some nice positional flexibility between Walker and Diggs. We've debated all the offseason who's going to take that single high spot. Is it going to be Diggs? Is it going to be Walker? I think the fact that both are capable is really what makes this unique.
Play sides of the field.
They don't need to give away who's their deep guy. Like with Glover last year, you kind of gave away, and they tried to disguise it in the latter parts, but with Glover, you kind of knew Glover was the deep guy. Now it's not as clear who the deep guy is, and that allows them to be a little bit more disguising. So both Diggs and Walker can play deep and in the slot. Tavon Wilson and Will Harris are both strong safeties in my mind, but we saw some positional flexibility with those two as well. They each got shots at the other two safety spots as well, and so that was an interesting wrinkle that they want them to be more than just boxed safeties. Andrew Adams, he was the addition from Tampa Bay. He only played single high. So, like, he's a guy who I think is very role-specific. But if they're going to keep five, he could be a guy because he's a good single high depth guy. It's just I don't know if they'll have a spot for him, specifically if they are going to keep Charles Washington, who is also a single high safety, but was primarily a special teams guy last year. I think exclusively a special teams guy last year, and he's a special teams guy they like. So could they keep a sixth safety with Charles Washington? I don't know. I think Washington could be vulnerable. I mean, he was vulnerable last year. I think he will be again, and I think probably Andrew Adams will be his chief competition.
All right, and the last thing we're going to note about the defense is three or five technique player. I don't know if I mentioned it the first time. Mm-hmm. Ray Smith. Yeah. Wasn't that the name of the guy in The Replacements? His real name was Wilkinson, but they had him on work release. Wasn't he named Ray Smith? All right.
I'm going to be honest. I don't know.
You've seen the movie,
Oh, yes. Yes, all right, yes, all right. Yes, yes. What I do know about Ray Smith that's on the Lions is he played at Boston College, and he played nose tackle, and he was a...
For Paul Pasqualone.
He was a freaky nose tackle that they are moving to... more like that 3-3-5 technique, and he has spent a lot of extra time after practice with Deshaun Hand, and so is Kevin Strong, the guy from UTSA, who's also in that kind of 3-technique-5-technique boat. Both those guys have been getting some extra work from Hand after practice, and so it could bode well for them. I really think they're fighting for the same spot, which is probably a spot on the practice squad, anyways.
Name Ray Smith. His pseudonym was Ray Smith. His real name was Earl Wilkinson. Played very well by Michael Jace, number 42. But he was maybe number two in your hearts because Shane Falco was number one.
Right.
Moving over to the offensive side of the ball.
Nice segue with the Falco
thing. Yeah. And that's where we'll start with our version of Footsteps Falco. Matthew Stafford, how has he... behaved in practice coming off of all the stuff he's had going on this off season? Is he seems to be jacked up to be doing something else, to be just engrossed in football at this time?
You know, surprisingly, he seems very relaxed. there was a play where he had to do a little bit more running than normal. And when he returned back to the huddle, he jokingly said, "Oh, I'm gassed. I need a sub." And it was his attempted humor, but it was loud enough that you could hear it, you know, where we were standing. He, of course, didn't take the next rep off. He went right back into it. But he was joking around with guys. There was another play where they were throwing to the running backs who were split out and as like receivers, and he just zoomed one to Kerryon, who was supposed to take a step forward, and he didn't take a step forward, and so Stafford just threw it to nobody, and he made a correction. Kerryon made the adjustment. Stafford threw it to him, and then Stafford ran a lap because he missed the throw the first time, right? And so he made the adjustment, did what he's supposed to do, then did what everybody else on the team would do when they make a mistake. So it was neat. You forget how great of a ball he throws. Like, his passing is just – he's such a joy to watch him just sling it. Because it almost looks effortless, and the ball just is a perfect spiral, and it zips where you can hear it. Like, you can just hear the zzz, right? And it's just – it's such a joy to watch. And so – he looks fine. He looks fine to me. I didn't see any real negativity. I didn't see any real. He didn't look distracted, so he looked good.
Yeah, and it's worth mentioning, you know, like, because I'll say some negative things here and there about Matthew Stafford, and you know, I'm really in no place to do so. I'm not a great quarterback myself, but one thing's for sure, he's extremely gifted when it comes to throwing the football. Say what you will about how he performs in games or whatever, but there are few in the league, maybe nobody in the league, that can throw football better than Matthew Stafford. But
it's really fun.
Let's fold this into our first listener question. Brandon Kerr asks, when an expert says that a quarterback can, quote, make all the throws, mm-hmm. what does he mean?
It just means you're hitting it at all levels, right? You know, so you can hit the ball, you can throw the screen pass, which is at the line of scrimmage level, but then you have your first level, which is like 1 to 5 or 1 to 10 yards, right? And then your second level is 10 to 20, and then your third level is beyond 20. So when you can make all the throws, it means that you can throw the ball accurately at each level. But it doesn't just mean you can get the ball to a point. It means that you can get it with some touch. It means you can, like, put it over on an arc. It means you can, like, put the heat when you need to put the heat. That's really, like, what they're talking about. They're talking about a variation of throws at all the different levels.
They always throw in there when it comes to throwing the ball hard and all that is, can you throw the 15-yard out? If a player runs a 15-yard out, can he throw the ball across the field and hit him while he's running out towards the sidelines? Mm-hmm. Anyhow, what about his competition? Not his competition, but the competition
the
behind him.
The backup competition.
Between Tom Savage and Connor Cook.
I tell you, right now I would put Tom Savage slightly ahead, mostly based on arm strength. He has a really good arm. Now, it's not Stafford-level arm, but it's a really strong arm. Connor Cook has a decent arm, and he has to put a little bit more motion in his hips to get that ball to turn over. But he's so athletic that he can do that with relative ease. And so his ball moves pretty quick as well. I can tell you with confidence that both Savage and Cook's speed is faster than Castle and Rudock's last year. Like, it's not even as close. It's not even a close match as far as, like, ball speed. Like, both, even with Cook being the third, you know, strongest arm on this roster, he's still clearly above Castle and Rudock. So, I've always said this about Tom Savage. If Tom Savage never had to face pressure, he would be an NFL starter, right? He has the intangibles to make I don't want to say he can make all the throws, but he can make a lot of throws. He's got touch, he's got accuracy, he's got he can hit that deep ball. But his Achilles heel has always been pressure. And when he gets pressure, he crumbles. And that's been what's held him back. So in this setting in OTAs with no pressure or minimal pressure, he's going to look great. He's going to look better than Connor Cook because he has more talent. But is Connor Cook more mentally prepared? If he is, then he'll take a step further in training camp. And we don't know that yet because we haven't seen that pressure element. But so right now, Tom Savage looks ahead. But by no means is this competition settled.
Is Connor Cook more of the Shane Falco or is Matthew Stafford? Because Stafford has the personality similar to Keanu Reeves, but he can make all the throws. And I would say that Shane Falco, if you watched him in the movie, probably can't make all the throws. Didn't throw the prettiest ball out there.
Oh, no.
And Cook's kind of aloof himself.
Sure.
So maybe he would fit the Falco role. But now I'm also thinking Cook is a player named Rick Dockery. If you ever read the book Playing for Pizza by John Grisham, it's about a former third-string quarterback for the Cleveland Browns who throws three interceptions and gets concussed in an AFC championship game. Yes, it's a work of fiction. Who gets released after the game and has to resort to playing in Italy for the Parma Panthers, which are a real team. Maybe that's more of a Connor Cook because he did get to play in the one playoff game. Happily was not pulled out of the game due to a concussion, but suffered a similar fate as Dockery did.
He went from playoff starter to practice squad player.
Yeah, but that was just because of circumstance, not because he was ready to take over the job.
Well, the Raiders were and are a mess. So
they were coming off some strong performances. You know, that wasn't a bad team at that time.
Yeah, but they went in a hole pretty quick.
No, you're right. Yeah, they cratered. Sure. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. All right, the running backs group. How about Kerryon Johnson? I'm sure saw the ball.
Clear starter.
There's not really a lot of discussion
but
there.
But it's nice to have that because last year we didn't have a clear starter and there was who's it gonna be and there's mix up. Kerryon is the clear starter.
But would you say he's a bell cow type ball carrier?
No, I don't think he will be. But okay, so the one note that I took out of the running backs group was that Kerryon Johnson, C.J. Anderson, and Theo Riddick, who are projected to be the top three, they moved with the running backs coach, Kyle Kasky, all the time. They never went with the special teams group. Zenner, Ty Johnson, Mark Thompson, Nick Bowden. Oh, Nick Bowden was off the side. Sorry, he was injured. But Zenner, Johnson, Thompson, they all did special teams work. If you're Theo Riddick and you don't do special teams and you're third in line, and then all of a sudden Zach Zenner, who does do special teams, starts to see success, and he maybe is playing at an equal level as you, it's very possible that Zach Zenner could jump Theo Riddick because of his ability to play
versatility.
In exactly. Patricia has always said, if you only do one thing, you better do it great. And Theo's one thing that he does is he's a pass-catching running back, and he does that great. But the problem is that Kerryon's a pretty good pass catcher too. And with C.J. Anderson in the mix as your power guy, and if you're looking for extra special team help, and Theo doesn't do it, and Zenner does, and Ty Johnson does, and you're like, hey, we got to keep Johnson because he's going to be our kick returner, but we need another special teams blocker, and Zach Zenner does that, well, Theo could be in trouble. You know what I mean? So it's very I don't think C.J. Anderson's in trouble. I don't think – and Kerryon is definitely not in trouble. But I do think Theo not doing special teams is an interesting wrinkle that could end up being a problem for him come August.
I don't want to be critical of you.
Sure.
But this really isn't a conversation. They'll cut Zach Zenner, and he'll be starting by week 11. we know he's okay, and we know, yeah, he probably shouldn't be on the roster. And we know he's eventually going to be counted on a lot by the middle of the end of the year.
Can I say, though, I'm definitely critical of Zenner. I try to play it as
yeah, you don't like him as much as I do. He's like a Swiss Army knife.
And people love him. And I get criticized for not being on the Zach Zenner train.
You're not wrong.
I like him. I think he's limited, but I like him. And I love his positional versatility. He broke his back and then he got jacked up, right?
Brutal game.
He was getting interviewed by Mike O'Hara today. His arms are ridiculous. I mean, he is. I mean, I know he's
Suns
jacked up.
Guns out.
Like he was like his veins were popping out of his arms, and he was just like, it doesn't look, the arms don't fit the face, you know, because he's I'm Zack Snyder. I'm getting my doctorate.
I'm going to be a doctor.
And I'm very highly intelligent. And you look at his arms and you're like, that looks like the Incredible Hulk arms.
He's a mountain man. Mountain of a man.
He is very prepared. And so if for anybody who thought maybe, you know, he would have like, you focused on his doctorate work because he's doing in medical stuff and right now in the off seasons, right? And
he's my doctor. I'd feel great that he's so focused on just being a doctor.
But my point is that he hasn't lost his focus on football, right? And he's still doing the work that he needs to do. And so I would like to see what he can do. I do think he is going to push for a roster spot. I still think he's a fringe player.
He's
going to
be on the team at some point.
But man, he definitely looks like he's still doing the work to make to put himself in the best situation possible. That's all you can ask, right?
Well, you have to. He broke his back, so you got to be ready to play football. All right, we got to get moving here. Or we won't get to the questions.
Yeah.
All right. So tight ends, Hockenson. Did everybody love seeing him out there?
A lot of Jesse James today too. Mm-hmm. The most interesting wrinkle of the tight ends group was that it was mostly Hockenson and Jesse James, but when Hockenson would come off and talk to coaches, it was Logan Thomas that came on as tight end too. And that may surprise people because you're like, what about Michael Roberts? What about Isaac Nauta?
That's what you were wondering about Michael Roberts.
Well, here's the thing is, Nauta was hurt and off the side. But Roberts plays the same role as Jesse James. And Logan Thomas can be that as an F tight end. So if you're putting Jesse James out on the field, you can put Hockenson out there. You can put Logan Thomas out there. I don't know if you can put Jesse James and Michael Roberts out there. They just don't offer enough versatility. Like, you can maybe do it if you're trying to, like, show the defense that you're going to run the ball. But when they were removing Hockenson, it was Logan Thomas. And so it just created an interesting wrinkle in my mind because I had been thinking Logan Thomas was kind of like the fifth guy in the hierarchy. But realistically, for what they're trying to do with two tight end sets, Logan Thomas could actually be probably closer to like a number four. And it could be that Roberts and Nauta are fighting for one spot, which is what we had talked about as a tight end three. But it's possible that it's either tight end three or bust for one of those guys.
Wide receivers.
That's honestly, this is probably the weakest of the group in the team, right? Marvin Jones and Kenny Galladay were off to the side working with trainers. And so...
Oh, we got to see the rest of them.
So we got Amendola in the slot.
Not Amendola.
And he stole the show because he was the most obvious pass catcher and the best pass catcher that they had.
The only experienced wide receiver out there. That.
And so what you had was Andy Jones at Marvin Jones' spot at the X.
Well, that's good for the name on the back of the jersey.
And Chris Lacy,
sufficient,
who had previously been an X, is shifting over to the Y, or the Z, and was playing in Kenny Galladay's spot. So what we saw was a starting unit of Andy Jones, Danny Amendola, and Chris Lacy.
We're going to see this during the season at some point, too.
Backing them up, Deontez Alexander was backing up Chris Lacy, which is expected because he fits more of that Z role. But the fact that he's still not good enough to pass Chris Lacy speaks to his development right now. And then Travis Fulgham was backing up Andy Jones. So Fulgham was getting some nice reps with the twos. And then backing up Amendola was Brandon Powell. Tommy Lee Lewis was not at the camp today. We don't know why. He just was absent. Who knows what he had, right? So, but Travis Fulgham actually had could have had the best play of the day. They were at the 47, something like that.
Their own 47 or the defense 47?
I think the defense is 47. It was right
in plus territory.
Basically right at midfield. And actually, they might have even been right at the 50. But Savage uncorked the ball.
Make a terrible detective.
Well, look, the field directly in front of us had some drainage issues, and so they would use it, and then they would flip to the other field while the other while that field drained, and so they were on the opposite field. So I'm now a full football field away from the action that's going on. So he throws like a 40-plus yard ball, and you can see that a safety is dropped, a corner is running with Fulgham, but as that ball is high point is coming down, Fulgham actually high points the ball. And he makes the catch, but when he comes to the ground and hits the ground, he can't complete the process of the catch, and he drops it. And then he's mad about it, but, like, you could see everything about him, the potential, all in that kind of one play. You could see him get loose. You could see him find a ball 40-plus yards down the field. You could see him high point the ball over two defenders who are both arms up reaching for it, and he got it. He just needed to bring it in. And that might take some time to do, but the potential is really there. He almost made that what would have been a terrific play. So I like what to see about him. I know he played the Z in college. I see him as an X. I think he could be. He's going to be a guy who's going to challenge Andy Jones to back up Marvin Jones. So that's going to be a neat little battle as that progresses. That's really the most interested I am at receiver.
BZ Ski asked, do you see another semi-big move for the Lions? I think the Lions really lack a deep threat at wide receiver that Bevel likes in his offense. Tyler Lockett. Are there any prospects of a bigger move to get one? For a smaller move, I've always liked Justin Hunter for some reason, much as my affinity for Mario Manningham or Notre Dame skill players.
Well, there's no one out there that's going to come in and be anything other than a wide receiver four at best. You know, there's a clear hierarchy of the top three guys, and they like Andy Jones, they like Fulgham. So even if they bring a guy in, he's still going to be he's going to have an important role, but it's going to be a small role. Jerome Kearse, who played for the Jets, who previously played for Seattle before that. They brought him in because he played with Bevel before, and they just couldn't reach an agreement with him. He makes a little bit of sense, but in all honesty, they had Marvin Jones. Last year was a down year, but the year prior to that, Marvin Jones was a top three deep threat in the league. I think, and Galladay has all the potential in the world to be a deep threat. And actually, he's more position or route flexible, where he can do different things, but I don't think there's going to be any person who they add that's going to come in and see any real significance because of the three guys ahead of them and the two tight end sets that they're going to use more often than not. So I think it is what it is. You just got to hope that the receivers don't get hurt. The top guys, anyway.
Moving down to the offensive line, we'll have you talk about it because let's have you throw your two cents in. But everybody knows that we've been seeing Frank Ragnow playing center.
Yeah, so Decker staying out at left tackle, Rick Wagner staying out at right tackle, but then they shifted the interior guys. They put Ragnow at center, and then they bumped Graham Glasgow to TJ Lang's spot at right guard, and then they shifted Kenny Wiggins over to left guard.
Wild.
It's unconventional because Kenny Wiggins was your right guard last year. Graham Glasgow has left guard experience from his rookie season. And even Frank Ragnow's experience is at left guard center, and he had right guard experience in college as well. Yet, they're shifting Wiggins to a spot that he's played infrequently, and then they're shifting Glasgow to a right guard spot that he's never played before. But the reason they're doing it is because of the traits that they see in each player. Ragnow can play all three spots. And I think Ragnow can be an all-pro at all three spots. And if you're putting him at center, you are allowing the team to get better around him. You can cover up weaknesses with him at center by allowing him to double team on certain guys and move in certain ways. And with Glasgow, while I like him better at center personally, I understand that his length and athleticism do also translate to guard, and I think he has the potential to be a decent right guard. I personally would have liked to have seen Graham stay at center. That's my personal ask, because I think he has a higher ceiling at center. But I'm in the minority in thinking that Ragnow is a better guard, but everyone loves Ragnow at center. I get the appeal. I think he can be great at center. I get how he can impact the others around him. I'm not against him playing center, but I am a little bit slightly concerned to see how the other two do at guard. And I think Ragnow will be fine, and I think Glasgow will be fine. But, you know, you've now put Wiggins at left guard, and his backup is Joe Dahl, who is also the backup at fullback.
Great fullback.
Yeah, right.
That was my next question. Is he out there playing fullback?
Yes, he is.
Good. As long as they don't get rid of that.
Bowden was injured and with trainers. So at one point, they had the second team offensive line was Crosby, and then Kenny Wiggins at left guard, Kolomatangi, Abushi, and then Donnell at right tackle, and then Joe Dahl was your fullback. So they had six offensive linemen, and then they put two tight ends out there as well just for fun. And all of a sudden, you've got eight guys that are blockers, and I'm like, I'm here for this. Like, I'm excited to see what they could do, because that's realistically something they could do. They could put Joe Dahl at fullback, and it'd be fun to see. You know, I thought he was effective in that role last year. So,
real quick before we dive into the questions, mm-hmm. was there any a melee or a Donnybrook that broke out?
Nothing to be
concerned with.
Ashawn and Ode Abushi got in a little scuffle at one point, but nothing major.
All right, Eric Lambert asks, any remaining free agents that you would like the Lions to target?
No, at this point, they have what they have. They're going to enter training camp this way, and we'll see what happens after that.
Joel Harnick asks, with all the extensions potentially coming in the near future, is it the right choice to re-sign our core players and continue building through the draft?
Yeah.
That's what good teams do.
Yeah, so. I think that is the goal. And that means that Graham Glasgow was probably target number one to get an extension in camp, and target number two is probably Ashawn Robinson.
Right. Robert Canfield asks, with the Lions' low cap hits in 2019, over $20 million in remaining cap space, most of our holes filled. Slow down, Robert. Shouldn't this be our legitimate Super Bowl or bust window with much higher cap? I know, that's a big statement, too. With much higher cap hits, upcoming extensions, and far less cap flexibility in 2020. Robert, I do love the way you're thinking, but sure. It's a little too, these are some stretches here.
Yeah, I think it's still premature. You know, I we're introducing a new offense, and that's going to take time to learn.
And they already softened the blow by saying it's a three-time learning process. They're already getting us ready for another letdown, but year three. It's going to turn around in year three.
No, I think...
Don't be surprised.
No, but...
this becomes a theme.
No, but I do think there's going to be some bumps with a new offense. Now, if they do well, or if they do average, or they do better than they did last year, and they return everybody, and they next year you could start talking about, you know, playoff runs and stuff like that.
Oh,
but
boy.
I just
want to win one playoff game.
Sure. I mean, obviously, right? But yeah, you know, I don't think this is like this year or bust type of thing. This team is more being prepared for the long run. And I think both Patricia and Quinn are looking at this as we're in year two of our new 5-year contracts and we're going to be here for a while. So I don't think they're feeling that pressure.
Atlas asks, what are your early predictions for our division games / how do our strengths and weaknesses match up against the Packers, Bears, and Vikings strengths and weaknesses?
Boy, that
might be a long answer.
Yeah, that's a good... You know what we could do is...
break it down.
Well, I was going to say we can do an article. We could do a podcast this season where we look at the changes, the additions and subtractions from each of the NFC North teams. And then look at, did the Lions get better in this spot? Did the Lions get worse in this spot? And I think we could turn this question into a maybe an entire podcast episode, right?
Yep. At least a segment.
Yeah, maybe, you know, we could save this one and talk about it at length more, you know, and break down the division opponents. And I think people would probably like to hear something like that in more detail than what we could give it, give that question at this point. So let's hold on off on this question for right now.
Was Rod Wood out and about?
Yep.
I thought he was back in the Rod Wood shed.
No, nope. And Bob Quinn was right up front with the offense. He was getting a hard look at what the offense was doing. So,
did either of them talk to the media?
No, no, and they won't for a while.
No, I know how it works.
The last time Rod Wood talked to the media was at Taste of Lions. Last time Bob Quinn talked was the NFL draft. And it probably will be a while since until we hear from them again. You know, both have talked about wanting to be more interactive with the media so that there's not as long of absences between their press conferences. We'll see what kind of action happens on that, though.
Hard Knocks. Mm-hmm. Now it's supposed to be announced soon.
Yeah.
And they say it's, you know, there's rumors that it's down to three and that Washington and San Francisco are... No, Washington's still in, but San Francisco and I can't remember who else now are out. But
the Giants?
The Giants should be. Yeah,
oh, really?
Are out, yeah. And it's Washington, Oakland, or Detroit. Okay. And to me, like, I would love to see the Lions, personally, just because, like, I don't know. Well, because I like Hard Knocks because I like seeing the practices of these NFL teams.
Sure.
But when you get down to the show is still boring. You know, there's really not too much to the show.
Sure.
They don't really tip too much of a cap. Nobody's as crazy as they could really seem, or at least they tone down the craziness if they are crazy.
Sure.
But all signs point to that HBO should be following the Raiders around the season because they have the biggest potential to just be a total disaster.
A train wreck.
You know? So I don't know why they wouldn't pick the Raiders, but I would still like them to pick the Lions.
The only reason I can see them not pick the Raiders is if they're waiting for the Raiders to end up in Vegas next year.
And wait for next year to do it when they move to Vegas.
And I know the
like
argument
they did with the Rams.
Yeah, and I know the argument is, well, maybe the Raiders will make the playoffs and then they won't be eligible. Okay, have you seen the Raiders don't look like they're making the playoffs, right? Now, you've got Antonio Brown. You've got a whole front office, coaching staff.
Players.
Yep. They just signed Richie Incognito, probably insane. And
he's got a long history with the law.
Like, as in scary insane. Like, he probably shouldn't be in the NFL because of his mental health problems. And like, in all seriousness. And he would be... I mean, look... people love train wrecks, right? And people would want to watch that stuff. I think the Giants would be appealing because you've got Saquon Barkley.
You've got the end of Eli Manning.
Exactly. The end of Eli and the rise of Eli 2.0, right? And Daniel Jones. You got Gendelman, who's already, you know, starting to, like, drive people crazy. And former players are talking bad about him. And... like, the Giants are all very much have problems going on as well. That would be a very interesting dynamic. They also have superstar power. I would like to see the Lions from a fan's perspective. I'd also like to see if I could find my way onto HBO. That would be fun.
Yeah, well, that would probably be high on my list.
Selfishly.
Too.
Yeah. But I do wonder how it would impact the team. And how would it impact...
usually negatively.
No, but right. And how would it impact
Browns.
Patricia? Well, see, like, Baker Mayfield looked like a shining star in that.
And they were coming out of a hole anyway, so they really couldn't do worse than they did the year before.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it'd be fun, but it'd be... there's some negative.
Well, we'll stay tuned for that. We got to get going.
Yeah.
We got some shout-outs.
I don't have the sheet. Let's see. We got 7 more reviews.
Yeah, from 183 to 190 in 2 weeks.
That's great.
Appreciative of that.
And we got 5 people that actually wrote written reviews. Kimmy K, KKKKKK, said that she was a new listener to us, but liked what she was hearing. We appreciate that. Corey Sr. with a little dollar sign as an S. I liked that. I thought that was clever. Zeal City, who said that they had a son, I believe, that wrote for another Lions website. So I feel like I should know this person, but I don't. And so based on the name Zeal City, so give me a reach out to me and let me know who you are. Best draft applications. That's some nice things about our draft coverage and how people really liked that. And then G Lions fan just wrote something on Sunday. So all nice things from really nice people who took the time to say great things about us.
That's great. That's wonderful.
Awesome.
And thank you for all for listening, everybody listening out there. And that's it for us this week. So until next time, let's go Lions.